Now, chapter 27 of the book of Leviticus has as its theme dedication and devotion concerning vows. And immediately when you begin to get into this chapter, why, you wonder why it is here. Fact of the matter is, it appears to be an addendum or a postscript to the book of Leviticus. And most expositors note this, and some actually consider it a major problem of the book. Sites, he doesn't even consider it, because after chapter 25, he doesn't give any exposition of Leviticus at all. Lange treats this chapter as an appendix. Now, I think that the matter seems to be extraneous and unrelated to the contents of the book, but there's no reason to make a mountain out of a molehill. I think that here we see a very definite purpose in placing this chapter last. And I think that there have been those like Dr. Kellogg with real spiritual perception. They note that all which has preceded this chapter is obligatory, while here all is voluntary. Actually, this makes a beautiful, I think, and fitting climax to the book of worship. And John, for instance, chapter 21 follows John chapter 20 in very much the same fashion. John 20 is his appearances, you remember, and then John 21, why, and he gives them that command in 20, you're to go into the world and preach the gospel. But wait a minute here. He says to Simon Peter, if you love me, feed my sheep. Voluntary, if you please. You find that's God's method all the way through. Now, the striking feature about the vows in this chapter is they are voluntary. But after you've made a vow, God holds you to it. That's the thing that's important to note here, that it's the response of a grateful heart to promise God something and then to go through with it. The thought of a saved person is, well, what can I do for him since he's done so much for me? And the inspired writer phrases it, what shall I render unto the Lord for all his benefits? And the believer today is enjoined also to respond to the grace of God. I beseech you, therefore, brethren, by the mercies of God, that you present your bodies a living sacrifice, holy, acceptable unto God, which is your reasonable service. No command, just I beseech you. And in Titus 2:12, teaching us the grace of God has appeared, it saved us. What does it do? Demand something? No, teaching us that denying ungodliness and worldly lust, we should live soberly, righteously, and godly in this present world. And here is what Micah says. He hath showed thee, O man, what's good. And what doth the Lord require of thee but to do justly, and to love mercy, and to walk humbly with thy God? Every normal believer today wants to do something for God. He wants to pledge something to God. The deepest problem is to find something worthy to pledge to God. Ephraim Cyrus put it like this, I pronounce my life wretched because it's unprofitable. And David Brainerd cried out, oh, that my soul were holy as he is holy. Oh, that it were pure as Christ is pure and perfect as my Father in heaven is perfect. You see, these are the sweetest commands in God's book, comprising all others. And then the question is, shall I break them? Must I break them? Am I under a necessity of it as long as I live in the world? Oh, my soul, woe, woe is me, that I'm a sinner. Now, what can a saved sinner offer to God? Well, this chapter answers the question. And a vow, though once made, becomes mandatory. Proverbs 20, verse 25, it's a snare to the man who devoureth that which is holy, and after vows to make inquiry. You make the inquiry first. And when thou vowest a vow unto God, defer not to pay it, for he hath no pleasure in fools. Pay that which thou hast vowed. That's Ecclesiastes 5, 4, and all the way down through 6. There promissory vows and vows of renunciation. And these are what we're dealing with in this chapter. This is a remarkable chapter, by the way. You remember we have a famous one in the Bible. There's that of the Nazarite. And then the most notable one of all is the vow of Jephthah. You remember Jephthah made a vow. And there's an optional rendering here of verse 31, I think, which seems to forbid the offering of human sacrifice. The last part of the verse in that section back in the book of Judges should read, "When I return in peace from the children of Ammon, shall surely be the Lord's, or I will offer up a burnt offering." And I think that's the way. He didn't mean that he would sacrifice a child of his at all, but he did mean that he would offer up that to the Lord as belonging to the Lord's, but not to sacrifice or to kill that person at all. And I think that's what happened. We're told here that the daughter of Jephthah never married. It came to pass. I'm reading now, by the way, and I think I should turn back to Judges 11, 39. "It came to pass at the end of 2 months that she returned unto her father, who did with her according to his vow which he had vowed, and she knew no man." That is, she did not marry, and believe me, that was a terrible thing for a Hebrew woman. And it was a custom in Israel that the daughters of Israel went yearly to lament the daughter of Jephthah the Gileadite 4 days in a year, because she had, well, shall we say, taken the veil. She did not marry. She was dedicated wholly unto the Lord. It doesn't mean he offered her as a sacrifice. He would do that or make a burnt offering. It was a rash vow, but he at least kept it. And a great many Christians today are not keeping their vows to God. I believe that God will hold you to a vow. If you do not intend to keep it, or you are thinking you're dealing lightly with God, why, you better take a second look at it. I think today that there are many Christians been set aside. I think there are many today that are being judged. And I think that today that there are many that have fallen asleep, as Paul says. Now, listen to Deuteronomy 23. "When thou shalt vow a vow unto the Lord thy God, thou shalt not slack to pay it, for the Lord thy God will surely require it of thee, and it would be sin in thee. But if thou shalt forbear to vow, it shall be no sin in thee." Now, God's not asking you to do this. This is voluntary. But if you promise God something, be sure you go through with it. Now, you have here a commutation of vows concerning persons, commutation of vows concerning animals, commutation of vows concerning houses, commutation of vows concerning land, and concerning three things which are the Lord's or which are apart from a vow. Now, will you look at these with us for just a few moments here? We have vows now concerning persons and the commutation of them. Verses 1 and 2, "And the Lord spoke unto Moses, saying, Speak unto the children of Israel, and say unto them, When a man shall make a singular vow, the person shall be for the Lord by thy estimation." Now, making a singular vow means to single out something of value, particularly precious to the individual. You remember David responded with disgust to something that had been donated to him. And he said, "Neither will I offer unto the Lord my God of that which doth cost me nothing." Now, let me say this to you, because I'm no longer a pastor, and I haven't any axe to grind in that particular connection, and I wouldn't have if I were a pastor, but I'd be accused of it if I were. And it's this. My friend, if you're in a church, and you are attempting to offer God on Sunday morning in the offering plate something that's costing you nothing, may I say this to you, God have mercy on you. Somebody says, "You think we ought to give a tenth to the Lord?" No. No, we're not under the tithe system today at all. I do not believe in taking up tithes. I've never even mentioned that in my 30 years of ministry. We don't take up tithes, at least I don't, because God doesn't require it. This is where you give a free will offering. And when you're cheap in it, I can tell you one thing, God's going to be cheap with you. There was a very famous man back in Philadelphia years ago, a captain, and I forget his last name. He'd been a captain in an army, but he was no longer that. He was a very successful businessman, and somebody asked him one day what was the secret of his success. And he said, well, he says, as the Lord shovels it in, I shovel it out. And the more I shovel it out, the more the Lord shovels it in. I think that's the reason some of us are so poor today. That's the reason some of us have such a hard time financially. It's the way that you deal with God. I believe that with all my heart. And he says here, by thy estimation. It means that which is of current value among the people. It's quite interesting. I had a man back before I resigned as pastor, when the stock market, by the way, first went down, and he brought in some stock and he offered it, and his comment was this. He says, now that it's going down, I just well give it to the church. God have mercy on that kind of giving today, friends. They ought to be giving it to the Lord when it's going up. It says that it must be something of value. It's something that costs you something. Now, verse 3, and thy estimation shall be of the male from 20 years old, even under 60 years old. Even thy estimation shall be 50 shekels of silver after the shekel of the sanctuary. You see, when a person is dedicated by a vow to God, it does not mean that individual must serve in the tabernacle. It means he could bring this animal and he could offer it, you know, and he could be given a receipt in kind. God says, I give you credit according to the value of it and the current value of it. That man that gave stock that had gone down, God didn't give it to him at par value. He gave it to him at the value that it was. Somebody says, you think the Lord really keeps books? I sure think he does. I think he uses a computer. And that computer has a way of just putting down every little detail. And I think it has you and me pretty well numbered, friends. I think that some of us are over in the stingy section and some of us are over in the generous section. God takes note of these things. We need to recognize that. But this is in the area where we exercise our free will. This is where you and I can actually act as God. We can do the thing of our own free will. We can either promise him or not promise him. We can either keep it or not keep it, even after we promise. But if we don't promise it, he doesn't hold us to it. But if we promise it, he'll hold you to it. Now, he goes on, and I'm not going into detail concerning this, but you have here the value that is attached to many things that were chattels, loved ones, these things that you could dedicate to God. And this verse 4 is interesting. It's a female. And this, I think, makes it very clear that this man, Jephthah, didn't offer his daughters a sacrifice. I think that's ridiculous to take that position. This makes it clear that she was given to the Lord in a vow. He made a vow to dedicate her to the Lord. And I'm of the opinion that what actually happened, that she was dedicated to the Lord, to serve the Lord in perpetual virginity, and the daughters of the land observed that after that, in after years. It was a vow that he kept, and he brought the price of a female and offered that to the Lord in the tabernacle. But to say offered her would be contrary to the Mosaic law here, you see. And you remember Hannah brought little Samuel in as a thanksgiving offering to God in payment of her vow. She said, Lord, I told you if you'd give me a son, I'd give him back to you. And she says, here he is, little old 5-year-old boy. He's yours. She kept her vow. May I say to you, it's wonderful. This is an area where you and I can move today and really reveal whether our Christian experience and our testimony is real or not. What have you vowed to God? Have you ever been to him and presented yourself to him? Have you ever been to God and presented your children to him? Have you presented your grandchildren to him? Have you presented, my friends, your possessions to him? Well, if you have, and don't misunderstand me, he didn't command you to do it. He just said you could do it. But he says one thing, if you do it, it's mandatory that you make good. Now, he goes into detail here. I'm not going to go into detail. The thing that's interesting to me is that if he brought to the Lord a skinny, little old runny animal, why, the value of it was taken, and he was not given but just the fair and equitable price for it. You see, God's going to judge, we're told, the poor in righteousness. And they're going to get a fair deal someday. So far, they haven't. Now we have here the vows that concern an animal in verses 9 and 10. It says, if it be a beast, whereof men bring an offering unto the Lord, all that any man giveth of such unto the Lord shall be holy. He shall not alter it, nor change it, a good for a bad, or a bad for a good. And if he shall at all change beast for beast, then it and the exchange thereof shall be holy. I remember years ago, when I was pastor of a little country church, a man took me out to his barn lot, showed me a calf. He says, I've given that calf to the Lord. Well, that little old calf, it looked like it wasn't going to make it, to tell the truth, and I think that's the reason the fellow made the vow. And I think that what he did afterward revealed it. Well, the little animal, believe me, snapped out of it, became a fat little fella. I tell you, became actually a prize beef and won a blue ribbon. But the man told me, he said, you know, since it's such a fine animal, listen to this now, since it's such a fine animal, I thought I'd better keep it. And I got another good animal over here, and I'm giving it to the Lord. And he took it and sold it and gave the money to the church and felt very comfortable about what he'd done. But it wasn't the animal that won the blue ribbon. It was another one. God says, don't substitute. Now, if you promise to do something for God, then you go through with it. After all, isn't that Ananias and Sapphira in the church today? They promised that they'd give the Lord a certain possession. They didn't do it. Now, they didn't have to do it. And you remember Peter told them that. He said, while it was yours, it was yours. God doesn't demand it of you at all. But you made a vow that you'd give it to God. My friends, what have you promised him that you haven't made good? May I say to you, this thing is real today we're talking about. God holds you to it. If you promised him something and haven't made good, it's still on his books, friends, and you can be sure it's on his books. You're dealing with a God of reality. Now, we have here verses 14 and 15 has to do with houses. When a man shall sanctify his house to be holy unto the Lord, then the priest shall estimate it, whether it be good or bad, as the priest shall estimate it, so shall it stand. And if he that sanctified it will redeem his house, then he shall add the fifth part of the money of thy estimation unto it, and it shall be his. You see, the home of a man is his most sacred material possession, and he could pledge it to the Lord. And a Christian home, as well as the children of Christians, I think should be dedicated to God. And the man here could continue to live in his house and begin paying rent to God as the owner, you see. That's what he should have done in a case like this. And I think there are great many folk. I had a man that had me come out and dedicate his house. He said, now, Dr. McGee, this is God's house. And he told me, he said, you can just come out here anytime you want to. Well, I had a house of my own. I didn't need to be running out there. But that's the way he put it. And I want you to know this is God's house. Well, I'll be honest with you. You would think if it's God's house and he's living in it, he ought to be paying God some rent. And you know, he never did pay God any rent. And I think that that's on God's book. Somebody says, you mean to tell me you think it's this literal? Friends, I know it's this literal. God gets right down to the nitty-gritty where you and I are living today. And we prove whether we are genuine in this area of our free will. This is where you and I demonstrate whether we are really genuine or not. This is a tremendous section. Now, there is so much else we could go in, but it all has to do with these things that have to do with a vow. And God insisted that his rights always be observed. And yet, in verses 28 and 29, notwithstanding, no devoted thing that a man shall devote unto the Lord of all that he hath, both of man and beast of the field of the possession, shall be sold or redeemed. Every devoted thing is most holy unto the Lord. I think here that all of these devoted things that God wants them absolutely then to pass through his hands in one way or another. Now, I have to come to the conclusion of this chapter and to this book. As you can see, there's so much more that could be said about this chapter and about the book. We have really been in one of the great books of the Bible. I repeat it again. This, my friends, is, I suppose, one of the greatest books that's in the Word of God. And I would say all important for God's people to know its spiritual truths. Verse 34 says, "These are the commandments which the Lord commanded Moses for the children of Israel in Mount Sinai." The believer today can be thankful for the grace of God in this day, so that what we do for God today, we do it voluntarily. He says, "If you love me, keep my commandments." All based, you see, on that. Oh, today, if we love him, we want to do the thing that will please him. How important these things are.